Okay.
Hey, Gallus Technology. We're trying to record the class. That's what that's for, so we can get it up online for people who miss and want to listen to it. Hey, welcome everyone. Thank you so much, Gary.
It's great having somebody kind of help introduce, share that load.
Takes that one less thing off of me to do. Hey, this is probably going to be the last time we look at the Ache for Fame. I may do some kind of summary thing next week, I'm not sure, but this as far as just sort of going at it, approaching at it from a slightly different angle. I hope kind of doing it over and over again is not something that you find taxing or boring. For me anyway, it's been very, very helpful to pull this thing out because it ends up being a real sticky kind of thing that's can be very confusing what to do with it. So it's been extremely helpful for me to pull it up and try and put words to it. So just real quick reminder where we are. This series is called The Unspeakable Ache. And we're just trying to resurrect those powerful longings that function as deep undertows in our life that sort of pull us along, sometimes drag us along. And these are so important because underneath are issues that we feel, whether it's issues with fear or shame or confusion about life or our own obsessions or compulsions, our relational battles, our disappointments. Underneath even our spiritual confusion and malaise at times, underneath all these are these longings. I mean, they're all connected and attached to all of this. And I call them aches and not longings because my own sense about them is these things, sometimes they call out at us in such a powerful voice, they actually hurt. and we're sort of left glowing a while in them, and then they leave us. And we're almost sometimes stunned by them, almost unable to get on with, quote, normal life. And often we, you know, don't know what to do with them, and yet in that moment we know we've been more alive than we ever have been before. We know there's something there, even if we're not sure what it is. So, what I want to do in this class is sort of pull all that out, and these longings leave us in a terrible bind because we don't know what to do with them, and the things we do with them often aren't very helpful. So I want to try and unravel the bind, and more than that, I really want the Lord, the Father, to come and speak to us in them and to reveal truth in these places that sometimes are dark or hidden or unknown. And if this happens, I really believe, in fact, I'm absolutely convinced that these aches lead us to our most profound experiences of the presence of God.
What?
Of the presence of God. Yeah, these aches, when we follow them out, they're sort of like strings that take us back to the Lord. So that's where we're going to go in this class. So let's talk, as I've done before, how the aches surface this week. And I just want to do one thing with this. We received a story by email, and you know, sometimes I try and read through some of these things that I get, sometimes I don't. You know what I mean? You just don't have time for it. But this one looked and the little preface was, this is a little long, but it's really good. I'm like, well, anyway, I started reading it, and I was immediately pulled in. So what I'm going to do is, this is a teacher story, I'm just going to read it to you. But I think, as you're reading it, you're going to see why I chose it to talk about the ache for fame or how the ache surfaced here. So this is a true story. As she stood in front of her fifth grade class on the first day of school, she told the children an untruth. Like most teachers, she looked at her students and said that she loved them all the same. However, that was impossible because there in the front row, slumped in his seat, was a little boy named Teddy Stoddard. Mrs. Thompson had watched Teddy the year before and noticed that he did not play well with the other children, that his clothes were messy, and that he constantly needed a bath. In addition, Teddy could be unpleasant. It got to the point where Mrs. Thompson would actually take delight in marking his papers with a broad red pen, making bold X's and then putting a big F at the top of his papers. At the school where Mrs. Thompson taught, she was required to review each child's past records, and she put Teddy's off until last. However, when she reviewed his file, she was in for a surprise. Teddy's first grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is a bright child with a ready laugh. He does his work neatly and has good manners. He's a joy to be around." His second grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is an excellent student, well liked by his classmates, but he's troubled because his mother has a terminal illness and his life at home must be a struggle.
His third grade teacher wrote, "His mother's death has been hard on him. He tries to do his best, but his father doesn't show much interest, and his home life will soon affect him if steps aren't taken." Teddy's fourth grade teacher wrote, "Teddy is withdrawn and doesn't show much interest in school. He doesn't have many friends, and he sometimes sleeps in class." By now, Mrs. Thompson realized the problem. She was ashamed of herself. She felt even worse when her students brought her Christmas presents wrapped in beautiful ribbons and bright paper, except for Teddy's. His present was clumsily wrapped in a heavy brown paper that he got from a grocery bag. Mrs. Thompson took pains to open it in the middle of the other presents. Some of the children started to laugh when she found a rhinestone bracelet with some of the stones missing, and a bottle that was one quarter full of perfume. But she stifled the children's laughter when she exclaimed how pretty the bracelet was, putting it on and then dabbling some of the perfume on her wrist. Teddy Stoddard stayed after school that long, just enough to say, "Mrs. Thompson, today you smell just like my mom used to." After the children left, Mrs. Thompson cried, she said, for at least an hour. On that day, she quit teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, and instead, she began to teach children. Mrs. Thompson paid particular attention to Teddy. As she worked with him, his mind seemed to come alive. The more she encouraged him, the faster he responded. By the end of the year, Teddy had become one of the smartest children in the class. And despite her lie that she would love all the children the same, Teddy became one of her teacher's pets. A year later, she found a note under her door from Teddy telling her that she was still the best teacher he ever had in his whole life. 6 years went by before she got another note from Teddy. He then wrote that he had finished high school, third in his class, and she was still the best teacher he had ever had in his life. 4 years after that, you see where this is going, she got another letter saying that while things had been tough at times, he'd stayed in school, had stuck with it, and would soon graduate from college with highest of honors. He assured Mrs. Thompson that she was still the best and favorite teacher he'd ever had in his whole life. Then 4 years passed, and yet another letter came. This time he explained that after he got his bachelor's degree, he decided to go further. The letter explained that she was still the best and favorite teacher he ever had, but now his name was a little longer. The letter was signed Theodore F. Stoddard, M.D. The story doesn't end there. You see, there was yet another letter that spring. Teddy said that he had met this girl and was going to get married. He explained that his father had died a couple of years ago, and he was wondering if Mrs. Thompson might agree to sit at the wedding in the place that was usually reserved for the mother of the groom. Of course, Mrs. Thompson agreed. And guess what? She wore the bracelet, one with several rhinestones missing. Moreover, she made sure she was wearing the perfume that Teddy remembered his mother wearing on that last Christmas together. They hugged each other, and Dr. Stoddard whispered into Mrs. Thompson's ear, "Thank you, Mrs. Thompson, for believing in me. Thank you so much for making me feel important and showing me that I could make a difference." Mrs. Thompson, with tears in her eyes, whispered back. She said, "Teddy, Teddy, you've got it all wrong. You are the one who taught me that I could make a difference. I didn't know how to teach until I met you." And this is Dr. Teddy Stoddard is at the Iowa Methodist Hospital in Des Moines, and there is now actually a cancer wing effort named after him. Fascinating story. I read that one, I was like, ding, 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 ding. Lights went off in my head just about all sorts of things. And this is what, as I thought about it and felt about it, this is what kind of pulled up reading a story like that. It's a powerful story. These are the stories that inspire people to become teachers. Inspiration may be too bland a term. Perhaps burn is a better term. To make a difference in somebody's life like that, isn't that what every teacher aches to hear? Isn't that what keeps us going through 60-hour a week, work days? I know that's why I ended up being a teacher and a coach for many years. Just you hear stories like that and you just go, I want to be that. Every teacher gets into this wanting to know that this is an opportunity to make their life matter. That's why teachers do this. That's why coaches do that.
Notice the critical transition in the story and emphasize it. Ms. Thompson, remember she said, I quit teaching the subjects and I started teaching the children. All of a sudden, the blinders went off, and she got it. She longed to use the subjects to impact the students, not use the students as a vehicle to get her information across. It wasn't so much about her anymore. It was about the students. Mrs. Thompson felt the ache and answered it. Now, of course, this leaves us with, you hear stories like that, and questions immediately surface when you put them up, the feelings up, into words. Questions like, so what do I want to leave behind when I'm gone? What am I really doing here with my life anyway? Killing time? Making a living? Getting to-do lists done? Isn't it to affect others for good? To know that my life counted? That's the ache for fame. That's the ache for fame. Right here in this story. And the amazing thing is, Mrs. Thompson says to Teddy at the end, you're the one that first taught me how to answer that ache. Yeah. I think it's important for me to mention something here, too. The reason why I tell stories and show movie clips, it's not just entertaining. Although I hope it is that. But it's very intentional for me anyway. These core aches do not surface when we simply talk about them. It's important to conceptualize them and understand them and put words to them. But they aren't aroused in that. They're aroused, they surface in story. Notice maybe what you were thinking or feeling as I read the story. Or what happens when you watch a movie. And I think the reason why this happens is they are aroused, first of all, in reality, in the story of our own life. These things are real. And secondarily, they're aroused in what is called sub-realities, in the stories that we create that in some way reflect life. And here in these stories, like Mrs. Thompson, we taste the ache vicariously through the characters in the story. And something awakens in us that we know is true and real and right, even if we don't know what to do with it. So this is why story is so important, whether it's a true one or even a fictional one. So that's how I thought that was really important to go to. So here's where I want to go to today. There it is. I want to approach the ache for fame using one more route, which is what I call the heroic longing. And let me just explain that in this point, and I want to show you something also. Let me explain, try and pull up the longing to be a hero. I want to think about the idea of a hero in a casual way and then in a more formal literary way. And the casual way is this. That man is my hero. Somebody you want to emulate. Or this woman, I want to be like her. She's my hero or my heroine. It also occurs, you hear stories about people that did something heroic. The media, call somebody a hero. I was thinking about the mall shooting incident that happened recently. I can't remember where it was. You know what I'm talking about? Wherever that was. And that young man who actually escorted, particularly this one woman that this interview, escorted her to safety at the risk of his own life and then went back in and brought people out. And, of course, he was, hailed a hero. And that's sort of all of these are casual ways we use the term. There's a more formal way, but first I want to note this. The hero, even in the casual way, does something noteworthy that others notice, whether it's through the person's character, courage, or perseverance. The life of a hero is one that makes a difference. That makes not a modest difference, but a profound difference. A hero's impact is not only life-changing, but long-lasting. And without his or her intervention, something will have gone awry, even hardly wrong. So when we think about the hero, it's very, very close to this ache for fame, to make a difference and be noticed for it. But in a more formal way, and I want to move here and just to literature, the hero in literature is the lead character in every story you've ever heard, from the fairy tales to classic literature to modern movies. The man or woman sets out on a journey. This is how the heroic journey works. Sets out on a journey to do something, accomplish something, become something. Something that needs to be done. This is the heroic journey. And along the way, there are obstacles and conflicts that the hero or heroine must walk through and overcome in order to keep the journey moving and in order to succeed in the task. And if the story is not a tragedy, in the end, the hero succeeds in the task and conquers. But the significance of the hero is not just what he does. The significance of the hero is felt from the very beginning. Because without a hero, there'd be no story. There's no story without a hero walking through the heroic journey. And again, this is the structure of so many of the stories that we know. The fact that all storytelling, down through the ancient myths, is centered in the heroic journey only goes to show how deep and how powerful this ache is. It's universal. And now I want to state it this way. A hero is not just something we read in a story or in the papers. It's not just something we watch in a movie. The heroic longing is in all of us. We all want to be that. Now let's watch it. If somebody could get the lights. Is anybody up there knows how to do the lights? Okay, well, I will run. We hopefully will have some tech help starting next week. But in the meantime, let me pull this up. And this is from one of the top four or five movies ever watched. You know how to cut those off? Start pressing buttons. It's the one right up there with the, yes, that's it. You just press off, hit house in the top. It says main and then house. And then just hit off for both of them, both the fluorescent and then the other one. There you go. And there's one more you hit off. There you go. Awesome. And you just turn it back on when we're done. Great job. By the way, this is the, just to let you know, this is the Titanic, and the Titanic has just sunk. I'll show about a three-minute clip, fast forward through something, and then about another two or three-minute clip. Here we go. So Jack and Rose here.
You're right now. Dad's coming back for us, Rose. Hold on just a little bit longer. Then we'll wait for the suction, but now we'll be coming back.
Okay, I'm going to fast forward through this little section back with the people on the boats, and we're going to go right back to Jack and Rose here.
I love you, Jack.
Don't you do that. Don't you say your goodbyes. Not yet. Do you understand me?
I'm so cold.
Listen, Rose. You're gonna get out of here. You're gonna go on. And you're gonna make lots of babies. And you're gonna watch them grow. You're gonna die an old lady warm in her bed. Not here. Not this night. Not like this. Do you understand me?
I can feel my body.
Winning that ticket, Rose, was the best thing that ever happened to me. It brought me to you. And I'm thankful for that, Rose. I'm thankful. You must do me this honor. You must promise me that you'll survive. Then you won't give up. No matter what happens. No matter how hopeless. Promise me now, Rose. And never let go of that promise.
I promise.
If you can find those lights again. There we go. Great. Thank you so much. Okay. I looked it up on the, just to check out the stats, but Titanic is like in the top four most widely watched movies ever made, along with Gone with the Wind, Avatar, and E.T. How about that? And what makes this movie so popular is so many elements, but one of them is certainly the heroic nature of what Jack is and what he does. He shows Rose what true love is, saving her from an abusive relationship that he's presently in. He values her heart, is interested in her. And then, of course, as the Titanic sinks and that incredible whole drama that unfolds, and he rescues her literally multiple times all the way into this scene. And where they find themselves in the ice-cold waters of the Northern Atlantic. And notice what he does here that is so heroic. First, did you notice they both can't float on top of the wood? He gets her up there, and if you notice, he all of a sudden kind of went like this, like, okay, this is how it's going to go. And he makes the decision to stay in the water, knowing he's going to die. You have about 5 minutes in that kind of water, or I don't remember what the stat is, but it's that 40-degree water, you do not last long at all. So he knows he's going to go quickly. He makes the decision there. Second, he keeps her going with gentle humor and some encouragement, and then with a vision. He sees her as going on with her life. He asks her to dream and envision. And then he asks for the honor of a promise. Do not give up. Survive. And in giving up his life, he gives Rose the strength to live. At the end of the movie, as an elderly woman, she reflects back on Jack. She says, I don't even have a picture of him. And pointedly makes this comment, he saved me in about every way a man can save a woman. He loved me that well. Whatever our disappointments with the opposite sex, I think it's important not to discredit, as we watch this movie, this is one of the reasons why it was so wildly popular, not to discredit the masculine longing to be a hero in this situation that deeply affects someone's life, nor to devalue the feminine longing to have a hero like this. There is something good and right and true in this ache, even if we've never had it in reality. Even if all we've known has been disappointments and brokenness. But I also don't want to leave out women here. I think women also want to act heroically. It's not just the men. They too want to make a difference. You know, look back at the story of Mrs. Thompson. What mother doesn't want to have this, feel this at times for her children? So again, this is not just for men. This heroic longing is for all. So where does this take us? And this is my last point today. This is where I want to go speak briefly about. I want to talk, if this is in any way true, if this is in any way another way to structure and think about the ache for fame, again, what does this have to do with Jesus? So I want to finish today by talking about Jesus and the heroic longing. The heroic longing actually takes us right to Jesus in a kind of amazing way. Here's how. Like so many of our aches, he doesn't criticize us, dismiss them, criticize them, scold us for having them. In some very strange and odd and miraculous way, he speaks into them and calls them out to their truer purpose and calling. Here's how this works with the heroic longing. First, Jesus becomes that hero himself. Mark 10:45, which I read last week, we were talking about greatness and the longing for greatness. Mark 10:45 states this, "For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." And many think this is sort of the center point of the book of Mark in terms of its theme. In fact, Jesus here is, Jack was a bit of an echo of that. In fact, the reason why you love every hero you've ever seen in a movie or read about in the story is because that hero is a little like Jesus. When God became a man, those myths weren't thrown away. He chose, in a sense, to inhabit all of those heroic myths and tales, not to diminish them, but to enliven them with his own presence and being. Here is a man who chose to give his life away, not for one person, not for a few, not even for a whole tribe, not even for a whole country, but for the entire world. Giving his life away in the most brutal form imaginable. And here he wasn't praised or lauded for it, like here in this scene where Rose, you know, sees this and is just so taken with it. Here, in this one, he was mocked, degraded, and shamed for it. I think it's the greatest act of heroism ever exhibited on any stage in any story. And look at the effect. Jesus in John says this, "When I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all men to myself." Here is the greatest heroic act with the greatest impact in history. Here is one solitary life to have a universal impact with the name above all names, the King above all kings, the Lord above all lords, one whose fame and renown would be endless and eternal. Jesus doesn't dismiss the ache for fame. He lives it and ennobles it. But he doesn't stop there. This is where it gets really interesting. What he does next is even more stunning. He asks us to come with him and follow him here. John 12:24 starts out this way. "I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." And of course, here he's predicting his heroic death for others and the massive significance such an act would produce. Only in death would come the impact. But then he keeps going. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant will be also. Where I am, my servant will be also. Jesus expects us to follow him in this venture of living heroically. And when the time comes, maybe even dying heroically, so that we can impact those around us. We are to go where he is, following him as a great pioneer in this heroic venture. This is no longer a movie we just watch, no longer a story we just read. The heroic journey is supposed to be our journey too. Paul put it even more strongly. He said in Romans that we are to be predestined into the likeness of the Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. The whole point of the great redemptive work is to make us like Jesus. We're to become copies of that great man, that great hero. This is not just for a few noble Christians. It's for everybody. All who say they follow him. So how do you start? You start where you are. Just getting close to him. Allowing him to rub off on you. Receiving his delight, his enjoyment of you. Resting in that. But then the call will always be to go outward from there. It will just start by seeing life differently. Maybe situations, people in a way you've never seen before, like what happened to Ms. Thompson. And taking the risk to say something or do something to offer truth or life to those right around you. You don't have to go looking for heroism. Let me tell you, it's all around you. We haven't had the eyes to see it. And if you open your eyes, there will be plenty of opportunities. And if you live a life looking and seeing and offering, there may come a point where you're asked to do something really, really risky, really, really difficult for the sake of others, really necessary. And here you'll be ready for it because you've lived this way so far. The Master himself said, "This is my command. Love each other as I've loved you. Greater love has no one than this." He laid down his life for his friends. This is how the great hero calls us to be heroes. Just like him. Let's move to some questions and start a conversation here today. So here's a few I've suggested. And of course you can go wherever you want to, but let's just kind of get the ball rolling. And I want to encourage some of you who don't normally say anything to take a little risk. If you got something you'd like to just throw out there, just throw it out there. Here we go. What do you feel when you hear stories like the one of Mrs. Thompson and Teddy Stoddard? Like, what does that kind of pull up in you when you hear stories like that? What movies beside the Titanic display the hero so well? Maybe something you've seen recently, you can just sort of connect to that image of Jack there. What do you think of the idea of Jesus calling you to live a heroic life? Like, what is that? Like, what does that lead you to think about? When you think about the longing to be a hero in your life, are you embarrassed by it? Confused by it? Enchanted by it? Something else? And then other questions or comments. So, who wants to start us off today? Exactly right.
What type of ripple effect that can have down through their years,
yeah,
and ages,
yeah,
and legacy.
Yeah.
And every one of us are capable of that.
Absolutely. In fact, that's the reason for our lives. It's not just a possibility. That's supposed to be the fabric of our lives. Yeah. Some of y'all may know. It's such a great point. Just pulled up another story of Dwight L. Moody, who was a famous evangelist. And as I remember the story, he was, I'm going to get it all wrong, but he was, came to Christ through a kind of a poor person who made shoes. I can't remember the whole story, but it was just like, you know, one person made this impact on this person who ended up having a tremendous impact on so many other people. But yeah, his story's like that. And it starts right here, right around us.
Well, you said it many times, Scott said it a month or so ago, everybody has a story. Every single person has a story. And if we'll take the time to listen to somebody's story, instead of it's about us, it's about them.
Yeah.
Serving leadership, it's amazing what the impact that you
have. That's a great point, Robbie. Yeah. That's really good. Thanks. Okay.
Somebody, the very last comment you made at the end of taking a risk. I was reading Oswald Chambers this morning. He said, you can be saved by the skin of your teeth, or you can lay down your life and take a risk and see where God would take your life in the lives of others. One definition of hero, and I think this fits for Mrs. Thompson and also for Jack, a definition of hero is one who goes before that others may follow. And I think that's
a good one. That's a good one, Richard.
A really good definition.
It really is, yeah. And I think part of that, I think when the Lord kind of is maybe pushes at us or calls us, or we sense that we need to do something or be a part of something that's risky, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, and that's that whole kind of, you know, to have an impact, to make a difference, to push out that way often requires us to go, I don't really know if I can do this. You know, can I pull this off? And at that point, it's so much easier to do what? Withdraw back. Because is the impact I'm going to have good? Maybe it'll be lousy. Maybe it'll be rejected. You know, all those questions kind of surface on this sort of thing. So, the risk element here is a part of this. But interestingly enough, as we take those risks, this is how actually the Lord begins to free us from our fears. I mean, that's kind of one of the things that starts to happen. So, thank you, Richard. Great. Someone else? Yes?
You know, the obvious example on the other movies that you think of is It's a Wonderful Life, when George Bailey was shown exactly his wish. What would it look like if had he never been born?
Right.
And it just ricochets through.
Oh, yeah, all that ripple stuff. Yeah, sure. And again, one of the reasons why that's such a popular movie, it taps at a very deep level that core longing that we all have. Yeah.
I recently reached it's no big deal. I reached a milestone in age kind of deal. I turned 50, and a couple of close friends who are not like best friends wrote me some notes, and it's kind of interesting because I read one of them last night and put it down, and I said, this guy is not writing this about me. And he was just telling me, you know, in my basic job that I do, you know, how I'd had an impact on him. And this is somebody that I'll tell you who it is. It's Robbie Hendrick. And I was like, I hadn't had an impact on you. I mean, and so the embarrassment part of it comes in. And as I was really not, I wasn't closing my eyes praying about it, but I was talking to God about it saying, you know, is this really true? I mean, and the answer was, no, nobody's, Hollywood's not going to come and make a movie about Chris Nitschke. You know, they already have A River Runs Through It. I'm not Brad Pitt.
How about a stream runs through it? It's a sequel. A stream runs through it. Maybe that'll be our little sequel.
Because that embarrassment factor comes in.
It does.
And that thing that goes, no, don't listen to these people. They're saying this to make you feel better. And I thought, well, wait a minute. And God said, look, Chris, these were unsolicited. I'm giving you this coat to wear, and I know it makes your skin crawl, but when you learn right. to accept it and not, you know, hey, look at me, right. you know, I'm wearing this coat, you will be so much more effective in doing, you know, just be comfortable. I've got you doing what I want you to do for now. You know, that's what you do. And it was... because I haven't been here in a month, and honestly, I've slipped back into guiding some on Sundays and not being here, and I've been feeling bad about it. And the last line, this has nothing to do with this, but the last line of Robbie's letter was, "And don't go back to working on Sundays." It's but I walked back into this class, and I mean, I read something this morning, and here it is. I see this, and it's like, you know, and I'm sure everybody in here can go, "Hey, you know, this ties in with something I did," or "This ties in," or, "Or, you know, wait a minute, I'm a retired airline pilot. How in the world have I ever touched anybody?"
Yeah.
Not picking on anybody in here, but you do. You know, and it's amazing. And I'm sorry, guys, I hadn't been here for a while, so I get to talk a lot. But I did. I told Bill, I said, you know, I now feel plugged back in. And to hear something like this, and it's, you know, and to me, the movie clips, like seeing Jack, is, no. I mean, I don't ever project myself in that. But the stuff you do and the stuff we do every day, I guess we just have to learn how to own it.
Yeah.
Or wear it.
You know, part of this is, I'm so glad you said, I think when we're called out that we have an impact, we're so, what's the word? Sometimes that longing has been so submerged or dismissed, or we immediately connect all these longings to pride, which is a corruption of these longings, that we're embarrassed by them. We're almost like we can't even go, we can't receive it. And this is what happens when people who deflect compliments all the time, like they go, oh, you know what, they'll deflect it to somebody else, or they're even deflected back to God. They can't receive something that people really want to tell them. They're almost embarrassed by it, and there are a lot of reasons for that, but I think one of them is this. We're just embarrassed by our longings. We don't know what to do with them. They don't seem to work in life, and we're just... And so when it gets touched there, and there's actually reality, it's so like, you know, kind of... what's the word I'm looking for? It's so jarring, we don't know what to do with it. So, you know, I've been embarrassed by my longings. You know, that's certainly part of my story. So... I think it's really important to make. Yes.
We went to see The Hobbit last night.
Yes.
Definitely another movie. But the thing that, and it kind of ties into number one, Bilbo Baggett did not want to go on this journey until he realized why the dwarf really wanted to.
Yes.
He needed a home. And once he realized why he was on this journey, he didn't think twice about becoming a hero. And I think that's a lot of it's relational. Everybody has a story. You know,
right.
This thing at work one time, I worked at Baptist Hospital, and had every person go through it. Small groups, and everybody told their story. And people I worked with for years, I didn't know these stories, and it really made me realize why they act the way they do.
Yes.
And so I think a lot of this is, we can let ourselves be heroes if we listen to other people's stories and get drawn into.
Yeah, and interesting enough, you know, what Bilbo, what made him a hero wasn't like doing, he just offered what he had in the moment, which he ended up being a good burglar. That was, you know, Tolkien's term for it. He just knew how to be stealthy, and he just offered that, you know, and that ended up making him the hero. But yeah, it's all tied in with the story. Great point. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yes.
I just think one of the things about Mrs. Thompson, which is true, two things had to happen. One is kind of the blinders had to come off.
Mm-hmm.
She really had to see her role as one that could potentially have value. And she had to see need. And she also had to love.
Yes.
And I think without those things, it's very hard to participate in God's story. And and she was even in a vocation that's seen as a helping, you know, lots of locations that are not seen.
Yes.
She's in one that's like, oh, teaching is sort of the epitome of I'm going to make a difference. And she wasn't making a difference. So I think that's even a more dramatic example that if you don't have the blinders taken off and see need and become relational, like you were saying, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
Whether you're a teacher or a field guide or a computer guy or whatever.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, and a part of that is, you know, allowing yourself to take those blinders off. And we often, and I would say part of our sin nature is we put those blinders on. That's kind of what happens. and part of the sort of the redemption is sort of taking those off.
So what's the key to removing the blinders?
Oh, wow, that's a $50,000 question. Somebody else want to answer that one? So I default to the audience. The key to removing the blinders? You got to save the day? You got to be the hero and right here and save the day? Embarrass you now? I embarrass you. I'm sorry.
No, it's just that I was just thinking, and it, when Jeff asked that, it just triggered what I was thinking, is that the false humility we have is truly a lack of faith that God can overcome my weakness, that God would and could use me. And it's really an issue of faith. Blinders is an issue of faith.
Yes.
I mean, we don't see the needs because we're so convinced that, you know, either we're too selfish or we're convinced that we can't help.
We have nothing to offer, yes.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, it's just it's a matter of faith. I don't have anything to offer unless God gives it to me to offer. I can't see the need unless God opens my eyes.
Right.
And that's all, that all has to do to me with faith in Him and who He is and the way He works.
And that's as well said as it could be. Yeah, I think the answer, or at least where to start, is you just start asking, take the blinders off. You know, where am I missing it? You know, and you know, as you walk that, you know, that'll come.
So Dini really showed that those are the two big ditches. One ditch is God can't use me, which is a lack of faith.
Right.
And the other big ditch is I don't need to help anybody. I'm doing my own thing.
Right.
Which is also
lack of faith.
So those are the two big lack of faith ditches, which is blindness, right?
It is. You know, whatever's not done in faith is sin. You know, so one of those scriptural core ideas. Yeah. So anyway, thank you for that. Yes. Right.
But really, I think a hero can be someone who's faithful. Or a hero can be someone who empties himself.
Absolutely.
And then crushes. And it's sort of hard to explain that when it's like I'm thinking about precision. You know, we've cared about you since you were, I'll say it to you, Chris. I've cared about you since you were 18 years old. I don't write you a letter. Maybe I will today. But it's a very sweet thing because I see your girls and it means so much to me. And I see your mom, your daddy. And I can't put into words what it means to me to Chris and Shannon. But you just, the light is in someone's eyes and that they are present and we gather together.
Right.
It's like a group of heroes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Janice, I think you've already spoken to it really well, even though you probably didn't realize it. Yeah, the longing to be hero, again, we take like the word fame, we think it's glitz and publicity. And we sort of have to let all of that go to really enter into this. And, you know, this is where Jesus calls us to. And sometimes it's doing things with tremendous impact, but it's not really known. And the answer is, it doesn't really matter because He notices. You know, and so our true sense of being a hero is really before Him. And then secondarily before others. So yeah, it's not necessarily, in fact, if you don't practice in the little things, you'll never be ready when the big thing comes along, if it comes along. And I think there are those big moments in our lives where those things come along, but it has to be practiced, you know. And just seeing that around you and being willing to enter in and offer what you have. So, I mean, that's in a sense how we become true heroes, how we really follow the Master here. Here's what I, thank y'all. So we're going to have to stop here just because of time. Again, the conversation go on and on. I'd like to just end with a little bit of quiet prayer. If you could close that door back there for just a bit of quiet, can we do that? Cindy Anderson, would you mind if y'all kind of shut that back door? Can you shut? Yeah, thanks. Let me just take just a couple of minutes and let's just close with some prayer and then we'll move on. Father, we want to just stop. We've hopefully spoken truth here or wrestled with truth, and we want to allow you the opportunity to enter into this conversation here. So just take a moment and first of all, just thank the Lord for being the real hero, for being the ultimate hero in the life that he chose. Just take a moment and thank Jesus for that. And then simply just ask the Lord, is there something I need to do with this week? Something I need to know about this longing? Just ask Him the question. And as we ask you the question, we want to have the ears to hear how you would guide us into this more and more, and that our obedience would actually be the answer to our ache to be a hero in ways that we can't even see right now. So would you coach us here, guide us into this, that we may follow and stay up with you and not be left behind. Thank you for who you are and for your just tender patience with us. And we trust you with our lives and hearts now. Amen. Hey, one quick announcement. I have another men's story group that I'm getting going, and I have one or two openings still left in it. And if one of y'all are men are interested in that, I know you've heard me talk about that, just come down and see me or let me know. We'll see you next week. Thank you.